Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Friends with Money podcast. My name is Michelle Baltazar. I'm the editor-in-chief here at Money Magazine. Thank you for joining us. Today, we're talking about how to manage your money if you're part of the sandwich generation. If this is the first time you've come across the term, the sandwich generation, you're not alone. But there is a new personal finance book out there that really addresses what are the financial issues or worries of those who belong to this generation. To talk us through that is Mark Bynum, who's been a financial planner for more than 30 years. He is now a money coach and the author of The Money Sandwich, a complete guide to money, family, and financial freedom. Mark, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, Michelle. It's great to be here.
No worries. So we'll start with the first question, which is, how do you define the sandwich generation? What is that?
Yeah, it's not that popular a term here in Australia. I first read about it a couple of years ago in America, but mainly towards estate planning. So lawyers were using it as a term for people looking after their elderly parents who are around their 50s and 60s now and had elderly parents, and there was going to be estate planning transition issues, and they called it the sandwich generation. So it fascinated me because I was in that particular age group of being in 50s, and I'm 61 now. So I started using it. It's the basis of the book I wrote. And I think we are going to see it more and more in Australia because it is actually a very unique phenomenon. And we've never had this previously for any other generation.
I love how they're calling it the sandwich generation because it strikes me as being between a rock and a hard place. You know, you've got financial issues that are about looking after your elderly parents, maybe, or being of that age in your 50s and 60s. And at the same time, you're also raising a family. Is that right? So you're kind of trying to handle two different issues at the same time.
Yeah, it's a tough balancing act, Michelle, because yes, on one side, you have adult kids, millennials, or just leaving school, just starting to start in the workforce. And, you know, when I was a teenager, you know, by the time you reached 18, left school, you basically left home. That was always the case. Now we're absolutely seeing that with the cost of housing, cost of prices, children are staying home more to try and save up for a deposit. And so, yes, you're seeing that. And so you're seeing the parent dynamic on one side of the sandwich, and on the other side of the sandwich, exactly as you said, you're seeing your elderly parents who are living longer than ever, and that's a great thing, but it does come with financial issues, aged care, estate planning, and that's basically, they put that back onto to yourselves or people of this age group, and so we're stuck in the middle. But on top of all that, we're also seeing our own retirement there.
Yes.
We may not have really had a chance to look at it because we're looking at these other sides of the sandwich, but that's just as important as well.
It's a little bit of a triple whammy, if you like, when you're thinking about money. And I know that we have a lightning round later where you tell us the top three tips for anyone who's thinking of, well, how do I really build enough wealth to deal with those three issues? And I'm going to ask you later to answer the question, is it too late to start saving at the age of 65? Because it seems like 65 is the retirement age in our mind. So watch out for that. We have to think about, well, you know, what is the answer to that? What is the truth about being 65? And, you know, the reality of it is that some people do end up penniless or in poverty around that age. But let's kick off with one of the challenges of being part of the sandwich generation. And it is what you've referred to in the book as the conversation. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes, I think anyone who is in their 50s or 60s will have experienced it or will soon experience it. And that's really, and if I can just give you an example, you know, there's mum and dad who are in their 80s now living in home, you know, one's had a fall, They now need to sort of say, you know, doctors are saying, well, they can't really stay at home, although maybe the wife is looking after the husband who had the fall and says, and, you know, that it's here. I hear it so often. They say, you know, you're going to have to take me out of here in a box. They do not want to leave their family home. And I can understand that. So with the sandwich generation, or the generation, my generation, talking to elderly parents, it's actually nicknamed the conversation, and having to sort of speak to your parents about, one, what is their situation, you know, and it's best to have obviously this conversation when they are healthy and there's no issues, but having the conversation to sort of say, well, what are your plans? Are you happy to downsize? Are you happy to get outside help in? Are you, let's look at the aged care situation and get some advice on that. What are your options? All this, to have this conversation, because when that happens, if someone, or if they're a single parent now and they have that fall, it's not going to be, oh, well, 6 months from now, you need to have aged care. The doctor's going to say, when your mother or father leaves the hospital in a week's time, they're not going back to their house. You need to have their aged care or an alternative accommodation sorted. So, and that's what a lot of people get caught up in. And then it's a rush. Whereas if you can have the conversation with your parents, just sort of know what their feelings are, even if you're saying, no, there's no rush, we're not trying to get you out of your home, but just in case this happens or that happens, what do you want? What is your preferred plan? Because we want to work with you, not against you. The struggle I see a lot, though, we're having this conversation, is a lot of parents, when they are elderly, you know, they've always been in charge. They don't want their children, adult children now, to be telling them what to do, and they feel that way. And so sometimes a third party, whether it's a solicitor, whether it's a financial advisor, can come in and just, without emotion, just sit down and hear, lay this all out, or even moderate, and that works really well. I've seen that work a fair few times before. So having this conversation, and even I've seen people who don't tell their adult children what's in their will, and I can't quite understand that, you know, that you want to keep how you're planning. If you've got two adult children, you know, if you're going to split 50-50, just tell them you're going to split it 50-50. There shouldn't have to be any real secrets, but, you know, it's just strange. We're getting older. When people get older, there are still issues, you know, I'm still in charge, or I still want to feel like I'm in control. So I totally get it from my elderly parents' viewpoint, but you just don't want to leave problems. You just don't want to. You want to make it as easy as possible.
I can totally relate, though, regarding how confronting it is for them to be talking about it, because you're dealing with your mortality in a way. And you are, these are hard conversations to have. I mean, I've had those conversations with my mom and dad. Interestingly, my dad was prepared. He knew exactly where and how and why and when in terms of the details. It was almost quite morbid, but he's like, Michelle, we need to be practical. This is what I want to do. Whereas my mom was the complete opposite. She's complete denial and just, I don't want to talk about that. Are you like, you're trying to like plan ahead for this? And even like articulating those words are very hard.
Absolutely.
So you talked about a solicitor perhaps, or a lawyer there. Is that your experience, that you do need a third party for both parties as well? So you don't want the parent to be disadvantaged, for example, and vice versa.
Yeah, in most cases, everyone wants the best thing. It's not as if this is trying to, you know, protect your inheritance or anything like that. That's rare. You know, you see it in the movies, you see it on TV, but in actual reality, that's fairly rare. Everyone wants the right, the best thing, and when people want your parents to be able to stay at home as long as possible, they just don't want to be surprised. They just want to have this, and having a third person. A third party, a lawyer or an advisor. Sometimes lawyers can be, because, you know, they're very technical, they'll do this, whereas I do find financial advisors who are far more in about the relationship as well and can understand a lot of the emotional factors, whereas a lawyer will be very, you know, matter of fact, here is a technical thing, and sometimes that can freak you out too. So you do need to get the right person, and every person's going to be different, but I just think having the conversation, or even starting it, sort of just planting the seed that we should talk about this, to get that, you know, your father is a rarity. That's wonderful that he's got that type of planning, because that's not the norm that I've found. But just having the conversation, even if it doesn't have to all be sorted in one day, but just at least have the conversation, have your adult brother and sisters or siblings there with your elderly parents, and just, you know, have a dinner, have this, and just sort of bring it up, just slide it into the conversation, just gently ease it. You know, what have you thought about this? Have you had, even just to make sure they've got a will. That's another big issue. We hear a lot of elderly parents say, oh, it's sorted. And actually, when they pass away, they never got it sorted. You know, they may have got it done up, but they never signed it.
Oh, dangerous. Yes.
Very dangerous. Yes. Sure. Very dangerous.
And again, with my dad, he showed it to me and he said, this is what's going to happen. It's crazy. Now, I'm going to throw a couple of statistics out there for our listeners who haven't had the chance to maybe meet a professional financial advisor. So, as a country, less than 20% of the working population have access to professional financial advice. So there's 80% of us that don't seek professional advice or pay for it.
That's right.
Setting that aside, I know it's hard to pin a number or to ask you what are the exact fees, but people just want to ask, well, how much would it cost me to get a third party in? Is there like a range or like an expectation?
Oh, okay. That's a wide ranging question. But just to say, here are the two ends of the scale. When people, and there was an article in the newspaper just the other day, and there was something like that, people would expect to pay $500. So just important, that's unrealistic, because it's important that to understand that when you see an advisor, they have to do a lot of research. There's a know your client rule, and it could take up to between 10 to 20 hours of time. So whatever that hourly rate, if it's $200 an hour or $100 an hour, times 10 or 20 hours, because you'll end up with a 50-page report, a very detailed, comprehensive report. And so whether I feel like that there could be improvements and the cost of that can come down, but if you're looking at somewhere between 3,000 to 10,000, I think somewhere in that ballpark. And the important thing is an advisor will tell you of this before you have to go ahead. So there's no question, oh, I'm going to be roped into something. So you can actually sit down, and I actually encourage you to see one or two different advisors, because this is a very strong relationship you want to build with your advisor. So, you know, it's important to get it right. So maybe seeing a few different ones, or definitely getting recommendations from your friends. But if you're in that sort of ballpark, and people might say, oh, gee, that's a lot of money, but it's even more expensive if you get it wrong. And I do say, clients, most people only get one chance to retire. So if, you know, and we're talking, if you're having superannuation and other assets have been growing, and you have $200, $300, $500, $1 million or more, doesn't matter what you have, getting really good advice or getting really good coaching to how your money, because I heard this really good economist say that the risk is not where you invest your money, but that you will outlive your money. And we're seeing that, you know, 25% of males will live past 90, over 40% of women will live over 90. So, you know, it's not 65 that we should be concerned about. It's that we'll be living for another nearly 30 years, and we need our money working harder for us. And getting good advice is important for that. And I often say to clients, you know, you need a financial gym buddy. You know, if the best tennis player in the world still feels he needs a coach to keep him, to coach him, to educate him, to keep him accountable and on track to reach his goals, why don't the rest of us? So I think it's important that there is a cost, but usually, as far as I can see, and having a long history in this, advisors do provide and prove their value.
I like how you've said earlier, you know, get a quote and make sure that it's a person that you would work with. Bearing in mind as well that if you're a typical working professional, you've worked for maybe 20, 30 years, then maybe your assets are anywhere between $500,000 to say $2 million on one end. And so then you then say, well, proportionally to protect that wealth, am I willing to pay anywhere between $3,000 and $10,000, for example? Of course, it really depends on your personal circumstances. But people just want to get a number. And then sometimes it just gives them a little bit of an anchor on what to do next. But I know that there are, this is the reason why there are personal finance books out there. For example, you've said to me that the reason you've written this book is for those who just want to get the basics and maybe DIY it, or, you know, just want to build their confidence before they go out and maybe pay for professional advice fees.
Absolutely. I basically recreated all the topics or areas of finance, from cash, debt, property, super, estate planning, insurance, that I would do in a meeting with many of my clients previously. And so I just thought, yep, there you go. You can understand it all. And not only this is this type of information to help you and to understand this, but here are also some solutions as well. And importantly, case studies. Everyone likes case studies to see, oh, okay, that person went through a similar thing to what I'm considering, like a sea change, or I've unfortunately been through a divorce, you know, how do I get my money back on track? And all these sort of things. So having case studies, and even what we were talking about before regarding the having the conversation, there's a few case studies in there about people and how they dealt with talking to their elderly parents.
Yes, exactly. That's all we have time for today, but really, really thankful that got the chance to talk to you. We do have the lightning round coming up, which is, you know, you've been a financial advisor for more than 30 years. So what are your top three tips?
Narrowing it down to three was a little bit hard, but here would be three that I'd be very comfortable with. First of all, cash is king. It's always been that. There's a whole chapter just on that in the book about getting your cash flow right. If you there's some stat about Wesley Mission about one in three spend more than they earn. So it really is important that you get your cash flow and get your savings. So the first tip is pay yourself first. If you get paid monthly, you get paid fortnightly, make sure the first bill you pay is to put some money away into another bank account that you don't touch. And then if the end of the month you don't have any money, well, at least you've done your savings. Because the most problem is people get to the end of the month and they don't have anything left over, so they've got nothing to save. So pay yourself first is number one tip. The number two tip would be getting your money working as hard as possible for you. And pretty well, just a blanket for all ages, is look at your superannuation. Even if you want to just set it and forget it, because most people don't worry about their superannuation, look at where it's invested, because probably about 70-80% of Australians, working Australians, have it sitting in the balanced default fund. You are missing out on 2 or 3% on average, because there are bad years, but mostly good years, 2 or 3% a year by not having it in a growth or a high growth option. And this is not advice, it's just, you should just do your own research and look at the over a 10-year time frame. What are the different funds been averaging? And you'll see, actually, I've been missing out on 2 or 3%. 2 or 3% extra over 20, 30 years will double or triple your superannuation. So get your money working harder for you. The very last one is never too late. You said before about, you know, people who are in their 50s or 60s think, well, okay, I've gone through a divorce or whatever's happened, I don't have enough money to retire on. That's back to number two. Make sure it's still invested, because why I say it's never too late is that people need to stop thinking, okay, 65 is retire, that's the end date. You may stop working or slow down, but what I find is most people actually, when they're in their 60s, actually enjoy it. They may want to work part-time, but they will keep wanting to work longer. But if you get your money working harder for you, think of 30 years. Don't think of, I've got 5 years till I'm 65. Think, I'm wanting to live till I'm 90. I want my money working hard for the long term. So if I'm still thinking 30 years, not having to work, but having your money in super and other things invested correctly for the long term, that's important. So I think it's very rarely it's ever too late, even if you're in your 50s or 60s.
Right. So there's your answer. Even if you're 65, it's never too late. You can start saving and building your wealth, because now we live up to 100 or even 120. So 65 is really the new 30 or 40.
It is. Just need to get the investment strategy right and, you know, have your money working harder for you in the background. That's the important one. Yep.
Fantastic. Once again, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of your insights with us, Mark. It's been great chatting with you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Michelle.
Before we go, don't forget that if you enjoy listening to the Friends with Money podcast, we'd love for you to recommend it to your own friends and family, or you can help us out by leaving a review on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. You can also send in any questions, comments, or even topics you'd love for us to cover through our dedicated email, which is podcast@moneymag.com.au. If you have any questions for Mark, you can certainly reach us, or we'll provide more details about Mark in our show notes. And finally, make sure you head over to moneymag.com.au for all the latest financial news and stories. That's it for this episode. I'm Michelle Baltazar. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.